something, or is it the combination?
No, so think of fulvic minerals. Fulvic minerals generally go with something called humic minerals or humic acid. So fulvic acid, humic acid. Acid or minerals, the same thing. You can substitute the two words. They are byproduct minerals, which means that they're created when microbes in the soil interact with the roots of the plant. And they act as grease to enable the plant to then absorb other minerals from the soil so that the plant then becomes nutritious.
So when we have the industrial farming of, you know, over and over and over, and how many fertilizers can we put on the stuff? I mean, are they fortifying with minerals the soil? Am I Kellogg to spread some, you know, fulvic on the field? You know, we're going to find out when we come back. Amar Pollock. You guys pay attention. Get a pen and paper. Go check Mod Garden. And I'm telling you, you know, it's a cool unit. We'll get to that when we come back.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines? Not sure if this is a good time to buy or sell your home, or feel like the process can be overwhelming and confusing? This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home buying or selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what to expect before, during, and after the process. A home is a place where the most important moments in your life happen, so making sure that you know exactly what to expect along the way helps to ensure that you have control. The future is here, so let me help you move forward with your real estate needs. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. Now more than ever, you need an agent that can help you make sense of what many think is a complicated and mysterious process. Feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. Or visit my webpage today at donnahancock.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Garden, modgarden.com. It's in the crowdfunding stage now. You got somebody from Wall Street was not healthy. He was not being, you know, nutritionized enough, and manifested in his skin and a lot of other things. You know, when I hit about a decade ago, you know, I was about 50. I started, I'm going, yeah, it's not the same. You know, but the first thing, rather than going to the dermatologist and all this other stuff, you know, you check, you know, your environment. You know, is there something I'm wearing? What kind of detergent am I doing? You know, we got off of all the industrial cosmetics. Donna makes our own soap and deodorant and all the chapstick, and we buy silver infused creams and everything from PPM Cosmetics on the site. You know, Mike Swatek makes a silver lotions and everything. Man, that takes care of any kind of rash and infections or whatever. Hell, you know, toe fungus. I mean, whatever, you know. So I'm just going, you know, there has to be a simple solution to a lot of this stuff, and it was nutrition. It's minerals, you know. It's vitamins. It's stuff in the soil that's been depleted so much, and you got all this green stuff. So I'm really interested in this, and of course Amar thinks that he goes from what, you know, a lot of stuff that we talk about, you know, on the site and everything, and you know, be a power guy. Well, a lot of you know that it's not just, you know, electricity or powering your life. You know, it's everything. It's nutrition. It's food. It's medicine. You know, it's energy. It's a shelter. It's, you know, it's all the basic fundamentals that we've lost control of, and he's trying to take back for the urban dweller. This is a, you know, this is what Dr. Frank is going on, naturopath that we do shows with every week, and he's really big on, in his office, he has grow towers, you know, for food. Now, you've made it to where it's a modular thing. I see several sizes here, you know, but before we get into the actual unit, you know, I want to talk more about your path. Now, you were to the point to where in banking and finance and Wall Street, and you're going around shaking hands all the time, you know, I mean, it's, and you're having where it was obvious that you weren't healthy and that didn't go over too well. So you had to focus on yourself. What was the first thing you came across where you start having solutions?
Magnesium. So somebody gave me magnesium for my headaches. And she said to me, and she was a naturopath. She is a naturopath. She said, overdose on the magnesium. And you're supposed to get, your body's supposed to get, an adult body's supposed to get 800 milligrams of magnesium. I took 800 milligrams and then that began to help in a little bit. And that's when I asked myself, well, what is magnesium? What are these minerals? Where do they come from? And why am I not getting them? And that began this journey of, okay, well, I figured out they're supposed to come from food. What's up with food? And so that began a new journey. Okay, what is happening with our food? Where is our food coming from? What are the systems? What are the supply chain aspects here? And that led me down a rabbit hole that really, really is troublesome. And that was 7-8 years ago.
Well, let's talk about that, because this path, you know, is interesting. You're a smart guy. You come up with a solution. You see there's a, you know, it's not just me. There's a lot of people with this kind of problem, and I think, you know, I can help. All right. So, and then and there might be a business here. So, you know, we're going to be talking about that. But, you know, magnesium, you have magnesium and zinc. You know, that those are the two big things. My wife used to get cramps a lot in bed, and her leg would go and so on. And I'm, that's a nutrition thing. What is it? You know, so you have potassium, magnesium, zinc, you know, different things. We started adding minerals to our lives and things changed. But there's a bunch of other micronutrients that we're not getting, and the mechanism by which our food gets it, you know, you talked about this a little bit. I want to emphasize this a little bit more so that I can explain it and repeat and pimp you in the future on this. Now,
yeah.
You said there is acid, a fulvic acid, that breaks down something that allows the plant to, you know, suck it up and get all these nutrients and so on. In a small mod garden like what you have, are you adding this to the soil? Are you getting certain soil? Is there some way you're feeding the plant to do this? Describe that process.
Yeah, so my intention is, why weren't we suffering from this 100 years ago? Why are we the sickest generation on the planet to date? The disease rates across the board, diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, you name it, cancers, they're all going exponential. So what I wanted to do was, well, I want to mimic the soils of 100 years ago. That's where I want to, that's where I want us to be. And, you know, so I found myself sitting, I live in an apartment in a condo where I don't have a garden. I'm super envious of people who have gardens. And hopefully I'll be buying some land and moving on to some, you know, some land there.
Yeah, get out of the city, man. Get out.
I'm totally down with you. I'm totally down with you. We'll be doing that soon. So I was looking at this wall, actually just right in front of me, and I was like, man, you know what? I wish I could grow my own food. Organic food is so expensive, because by this time I figured out that organic food is where I need to be. And I wish I could grow my own food. I would bring my own soil. I would make my own soil and grow my own food. And then I'm like, well, there's this wall. Let's go do it. Hey, maybe I can do it, but I can do it for other people also. And so the idea was, there's a lot of solutions on the market that can grow plants. These various towers that are out there, these contraptions, I believe they've got it wrong. 99% of them have gone wrong. This new industry, it's called the hydroponic, aeroponic industry, uses a new synthetic fertilization or synthetic way of growing plants. So my point being, anybody can grow a plant, but we're growing plants that are actually healthy for you. And what do I mean by that? We're taking you back 100 years. We're formulating a soil that mimics the soils of 100 years plus ago, maybe 150 years ago, where they're pure, they're untouched, and there's no external inputs that have gone into that soil to grow the plant. If I asked you to drink a glass of water, if you ask for a glass of water, and I give you a fire hose and say, here's the water, you'll be like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. No, you're gonna, when you drink water, you're going to drink in sips when you want to drink it, when you feel like drinking it. That's exactly what happens with plants. If they're left alone, if they're growing in regenerative, microbial-rich, biological soil, they will grow themselves and they will take the nutrients and fend for themselves. But what we're doing today,
Omar, we're going into break. God, you got everybody on the edge of their seats. They're like, all right, we're getting a science lesson too, and we're going to get healthier. This is, we've been promoting, you know, this mindset, this idea. And, how do you know you're getting really healthy plants? Are you getting all the goodies? Well, BodGarden.com says we can. We're going to find out more when we get back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence Day. How you declare your independence? Declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government form. But you can't be independent if you're dependent. And you're dependent on somebody that wants you freaking... I'll just say it, man. They just want you dead. They want you subservient. They want you servant. If you're not for them, you're against them, and you just should you just die. Because it's getting that bad. It's that bad. It's that freaking bad. You know, we were talking off air a little bit. Wonder Soil. You guys may remember that years ago. Patty, a good friend. I haven't talked to her in a while. So Donna's hooking them up because she's down the same line on the soil, not with the unit, not with the growing the food, not with a little modular unit you can put in your, or it was the soil. Wonder, we get these pucks and they come in little flower pot things, or you have different size discs and you just pop it in there, and also had some moisture absorbent stuff like in diapers or whatever it is, you know, to where it retained the moisture also. So this is, I'm going, hell, this is, you guys need to be best as buddies, man. You know, she had mass production of getting kind of, you know, have your puck. We're in, okay? We'll hook you up. So Donna's sending you that. We'll get that hooked up. I see she even still has the company. They kept offering her more and more and more money because it was better and produced more, better product. And Scotts went after them in lawsuits and lawyers because they can. They don't have any. They just do it just to harass you. You know, this is amazing. Are you finding that, Amar? As you're doing, you're coming to market with this, you're going to feed people, you get some enemies that are creative, and you go, what the heck are they coming after me for? Are you feeling that, are you?
A little bit. We haven't really opened our mouth very loud yet. So.
Well, you're in trouble today. Here it goes.
I anticipate that.
Well, go ahead, and I want you to finish up on the microbes and, you know, how the soil is it regenerated? Do you, you call it a Keurig, a food Keurig. I remember you said, okay, now I'm starting to get it. So you got cartridges or something, right?
That's right. A Keurig for fresh salads. Think of it that way.
That's okay. So how do you make this soil or these additives, and where does it come from, and how do you even know what to put in it?
Yeah, so the soil is completely pure. All the ingredients in our soil are completely sustainable. And again, sustainable is a bandied around word by the corporatocracy. Same with regenerative. They've basically hijacked it, and they've turned it into this, you know, this a word for themselves.
You mean organic doesn't mean organic? Doesn't mean organic anymore? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh my God. Even organic doesn't mean organic anymore. You know, there's a new label out there called Real Organic now by the Organic Consumers Association, because the current USDA allowances for organic food are so disturbing. It's unbelievable. There's, I think, you know, up to 45 synthetics that are allowed.
Yeah, no, I've been through this, and it doesn't mean it. You know what I call it? I go, no, I want some virgin food, you know?
Yeah.
Virgin food, you go, no, funny. Uncle Sam wants to come in. No, we'll just put the tip in. Yeah, that's it. I go, hey, man, you're screwing with it. It's not virgin anymore, you know? So I'm just
exactly.
Virgin soil. Yeah, you do that.
And by the way, I actually tried to buy virginsoil.com, but it was taken. So
you want it? But so I got it. No, I don't have
it. Yeah, you got it. Yeah. Same with Ancestry, Ancestor Biology or something like that. Anyway, the soil is made up of, you know, what do you find in soil? When you go to a pure, untouched field, you find worms. And so worms are, of course, pooping there. That is an important, quote unquote, fertilizer. I don't like to use the word fertilizer, but it's a new word. It's food for plants. So we use vermicompost or worm poop. We also use mushroom. We also use other biological material, living microbes that make up our soil. There's, when I say there's nothing unsustainable that's added in there, a lot of people put peat moss in their soil. If we take all the peat moss from this world, it'll stop sequestering carbon from the air. And so we don't use peat moss in our soils. So that's the thinking behind our soil. It's virgin, it's untouched, and there's no additives. There's nothing that's not found in nature that's going into our soil.
Well, are you adding these Keurig packs to, is it like a aquaponic? We did aquaponics, you know, so we did the fish thing and so on. So we got that. We had chickens and turkeys and goats. And so we've been in down the food. When we come back off the road, you know, it's a, you know, homie's going to be a farmer. You know, we're going to do something. You make it easy for me, not Keurig it, man. You win. So I'm just going, you know, the actual soil, the mass of it, is just your cartridges, or are you supplementing dirt from the backyard? I mean, yeah, how is it filling up the pallet?
No, the reason why we're not substituting, no, it's complete. So when you get the cartridge of soil or the block of soil that you insert into the tiny farm pod, and there's eight of them, it's complete. You don't have to add anything else to it. You don't substitute it with, yeah, because we don't know what's in your soil in the backyard.
Yeah,
the soil in the backyard. Some of the worst soil that the real estate developers put down. And so
they don't put down the good stuff, yeah.
They don't put down the good stuff, yeah. They cut corners. But we want, what we're after as a company are two things as it relates to nutrition. The level of nutrition in each of the plants, and I should say the level of absorbable nutrition in each of the plants, you know, high, low, how high is the nutrition? And the variety of nutrients and them being complete in the plants. So right now, if you go to a plant, they say, oh, this plant, if you go to a plant that's grown in the field, they'll be selective in measuring the nutrients in that plant and say, oh, look, we have all these nutrients in the plants. And they'll rattle off three or four or five of them. But in reality, there's actually nutrients in the plant that we don't even have names for. There's actually microbes in the soil that we don't actually know the names for yet because they're unnamed, they have not been discovered. So we're not touching that. We're keeping that whole so that the plant grows with not only the levels of nutrition, but also the variety of nutrients.
So how many crops do you get out of a cartridge? I mean, are you having a Kool-Aid packet of boosters that you're adding or something? Or do you totally change it out after a while? How does that work?
Yeah, so it depends. It depends on what you're growing. So right now what we're doing is we're saying let's focus on the market for greens. So microgreens, sprouts, leafy greens, and herbs. Why those? Because they're fast moving, they grow fast, and they're some of the most nutrient-dense plants that are out there. So if you know, a potato, and efficient. A potato, you wouldn't grow a potato because a cauliflower would take up too much room. Broccoli would take up too much room. You want to grow plants that are highly nutritious, fast moving, so that you feel like, you know, you're getting something out of it on a daily basis. So you can grow up to 32 servings of microgreens every month.
Wow. Okay. So this is, so you're growing your own vitamins. This is a health, a plant doctor, you know, it's, there should be some kind of name. Like, you got Maud Garden, you know, Dr. Maud Garden or something. I mean, you know, this is, so tell us about your experience, why you went down this road. When you started getting the nutrients, how much did it change your life and how fast?
Yeah, just to respond to your last comment there about doctors, we have a number of doctors that actually want to put Tiny Farm in their offices so that when the patient comes with diabetes, let's say, they say, we're going to prescribe you we're going to prescribe you a tiny farm too, so you can grow your own nutrition.
So I got a line of doctors sitting here waiting. The fact they've been doing it, you know, they've been pimping this. They got these little towers and so on. But, you know, yeah, if you're not getting the right minerals in, you need to, do it right. You know, so I think there's a big market for this. If there isn't, there's going to be, and there should be. And we're going to pimp it out a little bit more when we come back in the next segment with Amar. Come on, go ahead and say it. Well, I'd say your last name. Yeah, we got to get you to say it. Yeah, okay. So we'll have Amar back in just a little bit. Modgardens.com. Go check it out. You know, you want to see what it looks like. And it's a cartridge. It's all ready to go. Made it where, you're living in New York City and you have green.
From the fourth letter of Captain Mark. Landlubbers are conditioned to believe that the originators of an idea deserve exclusive rights to it. But these innovators are nothing but privateers, granted a monopoly by the crown. Potential inventors are restricted from using their own property and forced to navigate a wilderness of prohibited ideas. These patterned monopolies are intellectual colonization. This alliance of means between the crown and the privateers is not an alignment of ends. Both collude to establish a permission culture, in which everyone second-guesses their own thoughts, never sure which ideas are permissible to develop. But their objectives are different. The crown aims to cripple dissenting opinion, while privateers will only be satiated when all new ideas already fall under their monopoly. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. The future belongs to individuals who think, speak, and act freely to create and share without reservation. Join the conversation at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, Amar. Amar from modgarden.com, modgarden.com. He went into research on this about past 5 years. He started doing trade shows and so on, going to home improvement or food, kind of all of a sudden, boom, they're lined up around the, snaking through the whole conference that they got to see. People doing, pre-buys or pre-sale, gimme. He wins awards. He goes on other programs and so on. It's like, damn, I think I hit something here. Yes, you did. Okay. So that, and a lot of these, there are different things and they have different additives or, we do the fish thing. We've done the aquaponics deal. We've done, and then I tried, some square foot gardening and we have our aqua, we make geodesic domes. So we got an aqua dome, and how it plumbed. And I'm looking forward to, I build my home. We did all this testing for the past decade going around the country. We find a place. I'm going to show you what's up. But, we knew that, like with the Wonder Soil and the kind of soil that you're doing and the units that you have, I'm for making it modular, man. One of the things, I got a little Arduino kit, the science kit, kind of learn how to do actuators and step motors and all that kind of stuff. And why are you doing that? Because I'm lazy. That's why. I'll spend all the time learning how to do this so I can have robots farm for me. I mean, damn, how hard is it to, turn on the water and stuff? So I'm with you, brother. You have this. It's actually producing some nutrition-dense food. How sustainable is that soil? Am I getting recharges of it? Am I putting in? And then I got the list of what I should grow. And then you down the seeds and, Monsanto freaking, Franken food and everything. So, I don't want the GMOs. Are you a source for seeds? Are you suggesting that too? I mean, how deep does this go, man?
Yeah. We go all the way. It's either that or go home. Go big or go home. Everyone has a God-given right to pure food at affordable prices. And I want that for everyone. We cut no corners. This is not what this is about. This is not about me trying to have a startup and get rich. This is about me trying to feed the world. And we've attracted one of the agencies, one of the food agencies, and we just won a contract exclusive vendor for a refugee village in Portugal. and that'll feed 31,000 people.
Damn.
So that's just one. That's just one village, and there's six other villages that. So we have a lot to look forward to. So our future is really bright. The unit itself is going to be made from recycled materials. The soil itself is completely regenerative, and we're not going to have one massive warehouse sending soil to everyone. We're actually going to have soil made in a regenerative, circular manner. So for each of the villages that we're putting these installations in, we're also going to be taking their compost waste, regenerating it into a rejuvenant, and then adding that ingredient back.
Why do that when Monsanto will just give you, a liquid thing?
Yeah, exactly. Monsanto, if I start rattling off statistics with Monsanto, which you and your listeners probably already know, they have taken over the world. They, among three other agrochemical companies, own 60% of the seeds. And that is really scary.
Scary. That's the word.
we want to empower people to be able to control their own food, grow their own food with the best soil and the best seeds. And we have sources of seeds. Certainly I want you to be empowered in growing your own food and even seeding your own, seeds.
You're right. It's not just a personal thing or a business opportunity. This is a humanity thing. And as you cured yourself, and you consider yourself cured, you start eating right and you're good. Yeah, then pretty hands. Okay. So this is, how long did it take? When you started getting the right minerals and so on, how fast did you recover?
Yeah. So, we're so used to eating the American standard diet. Oh, we love the, I used to love to go to McDonald's. I haven't had McDonald's in probably 10 years now. I love my chocolate bar, but I haven't had a Snickers in I don't know how long. So I do eat chocolate, but it has to be pure chocolate. It took a while. It took a while because the food that we eat in America and in Canada and around the world, actually, all around the world, is so pervasive and it fools you. When I go to a store, like Whole Foods, for instance, Whole Foods does not sell organic food. It sells less organic food than it sells GMO food, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And you see this word fresh on it, pure, natural. You just grab it and pick it up. And it's anything but that.
Yeah.
If it says the word pure, fresh, or natural, it's almost guaranteed to be a GMO food.
I'm with you. And when the word organic, it used to mean organic. And then you get organic government certification of organic of organic. Then the lobbyists come in and define what's organic of organics, whatever they want it to be organic. And that's why I said virgin. I go, 90, man, you screw with it, it ain't virgin anymore, all right? So I just, done. And I'm so glad to see that, not only that you're doing this, but that you witnessed the support for it. People are, pounding on the keyboard, gimme, 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 gimme. How are you going to do production? Where is production? You're Toronto, are you moving production to Texas, or, where are you going to have your primary production?
Yep. We don't know yet. We're trying to keep it in Canada. It'd be amazing to have a Canadian product, which is considered a really green country. It's I call it America's fridge. So
there you go.
Very few people. So we're trying to keep it in Canada. We'd like to keep it in Canada. It'd be great if we could. So we'll see about that. And then the soil will create soil hubs around wherever there's large swaths of population that are consuming our product.
Yeah. I mean, who needs to be shipping soil all over the place? I mean, that's when that's a good idea. The basic nutrients that you're adding into it, where are you getting that?
So we're not adding nutrients per se. So the
you're
soil,
building
as I
them.
Mentioned,
you're going to create them there on site.
Yeah. So you mix those natural ingredients, and when you mix those natural ingredients, so I want you to think of soil as a city. So when people say living soil, what does that exactly mean? When people say dead soil, what does that mean? What's the difference between dirt, dead dirt, and living soil? Think of it as a Sahara Desert, dead soil, and a bustling city. So when you think about a city, you see cars moving through, you have doctors, lawyers, electricians, engineers. Every one of them has jobs to do. And they're all doing the jobs, and it's all harmony. That's exactly what's going on in the soil.
No, I understand. We're going to run out of time. I apologize. But it's like a yeast starter pack to brew your beer. I mean, you know, you got...
Add water.
No, you don't need it. Don't need it. I don't need a starter. We're just going to get the right stuff together. It does its thing.
Water.
All right, cool. Yeah. Cool. The manufacturing of the device, the casing, the prettiness of the product, the lighting, all that, you know, so that's being designed by what, industrial design kids in the University of?
No. We have a professional. It was being done with the University of, but now we have a company called Design First. They're engineering industrial designers here in Canada, in Ottawa.
Now, this is awesome. You mind we follow up on this? You know, when's your crowdfunding window, and where's it at? Is it through your site? Is it on one of the platforms? What?
So you can go to the site. But we're just in the middle of producing a pseudo fundraising documentary. It'll be a half hour show, and it'll be coming to TVs across the United States. And so definitely watch out for that. I'll send you a link when that's ready.
No, when keep us in mind. We'll keep pumping on this because we're going to need to buy it, you know? So, I mean, I need to know when that is. And we'll, you know, this fall into the year, we'll be, you know, looking to, you know, build that, and it fits in the dome right there. You know what I mean? So this is something that we won't be in. We're going into the exit music here, but, I want to stay up on this. I'm glad that we got hooked up together. Donna's going to be sending you contact for Wonderfoil to see where they're at on their stuff. Because they're right in line. And mass production. So, you know, it's a stamp press and it's compressed and add water. I mean, you know, so this might, you guys might be all best buddies now.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not
Independence of here in Stancock here, and where are we at? Tonopah, Arizona. Pick up the bus this afternoon, and then we'll be like, you know, on all cylinders, hopefully. All right. Says right here, what are we going to be talking about? Kevin Jenkins, and it comes from James Lyons Weiler. And I got right here. It says James Lyons Weiler's brother, okay? So I'm just going, seriously, man. You know, hey, but it's not that, you know, I mean, you know, he's black, all right? So I'm going, it's not really his brother. So they're good friends, and he wanted to make sure I got Kevin Jenkins on. And we're going to be talking about minority issues. You know, gosh darn it, because we can. And vaccines. So this has been, you know, I felt bad when they go, yeah, the black community needs to get the advantage. We're gonna stick you with needles first. And I'm like, yay! Wow, it's that bad. So we're going to be talking about some racial issues here, and as it applied, a lot of things that we're talking about, but we can't, you know, give it proper due because we're not. I'm not black. You know, I have an opinion. You know, I everybody's got a. You know, black friends, you know, I grew up in Florida, the black community quite a bit. Here in Arizona, not so much. But I tell you, the racial issues go around this country is seems to me. I need you to say it, Kevin, because I have like this attitude of victimhood and defensiveness and reparation. There, it seems so offensive to me. How would you characterize what's going on and what's the solution? Help us out, Kevin.
Well, it's pretty interesting that you bring up this whole narrative about race, because right now in this country, it's very interesting that everybody's talking about it, and it's being used as a wedge to split, you know, the white and black community or whatever tribe you're a part of. It's not about healing the country. It's about keeping us divided. You know, I'm a black American male. I live in the city of Newark. I've worked in my city and helped to rebuild my city over the last past several decades. And, you know, the thing that I find interesting about this whole race narrative, it keeps us trapped from really expanding and building on the things I believe this country needs to be working on right now. And that's unification. That's a single focus on healing our community. That's a single focus on bringing our community together so we can have a bigger conversation about what we want to have this country look like in the next 25 years. I'm giving a speech in Tulsa, and the theme of it this weekend is building a bridge to the future, our future, not theirs. You know, do we want a future that's built on race, a race narrative that keeps us split from talking about the serious issues? Do we want to be tracked and traced in this country? Do we want to be controlled by the oligarchs of this of the world to tell us what to do, how to love our family, how to embrace truth, how to embrace love? And I think what they're doing, the global tyrants, what they're doing is they're paying a group of people in this country to stoke fear and stoke racial tension so they can move forward with their plan of action. And that is total control over the human body, total control over your movement, total control of how you worship, total control of how you build and own anything on the planet. So, you know, I've been watching this from afar, and I'm stunned because what I'm seeing is a lot of black Americans that look like me, you know, the barbarians, not outside the gate, but inside the gate, are stoking that because they're being financed to keep us in that victim space, financed to keep us from dealing with the real issues that we have to deal with in our own cities.
To what end?
You know, it's really something.
You know, I want to know why. You know, this, I don't know. I don't see the logic in it other than there's something, other agenda that we're not in the club. You know,
the agenda is to stop us from really having the big debate about what needs to be done and how we heal our own communities. I'll give you an example. You know, for 50 to 60 years now, we've had more black mayors. We've had more black congressmen. We have several senators. We have councilmen and mayors all across this country, people that are in leadership positions, right, that represent our cities. And our cities are worse off than they were in the 60s. Now, I can't blame that on you, Ernest. I can't blame this on some global narrative or network that's stopping us from bringing value to our own voice, bringing value to our own community, and bringing value to ownership, you know, of our own square. So I can't blame you for that. You know, I understand, you know, structural racism. I understand systemic racism. I understand all of those things. But when I look around my community where black people have been leading for the past several decades, over 10 decades, I'm saying to myself, where did we go wrong? Why are we talking about all of those other issues when we should be having an internal discussion in our own community? And that's the problem that I'm having with this discussion.
That discussion is not productive to they, them, those that want to, you know, do whatever. And I remember systemic racism is law. It was the government that was systemically racist. And I'm going, well, I grew up in it. You know, my father had, you know, I grew up at a big Gulf service station with an auto body and a U-Haul thing and a wrecker service and all this kind of. And I remember, you know, how racism manifested itself in a lot of different ways as a kid. But I asked questions. And, I'll tell this story. We had three bathrooms. It was the men's room, the women's room, and the colored room that was, you know, around the corner in the back. Well, I was in charge of cleaning the bathrooms. Well, guess which one was the messiest all the time? It was the men's room, all the greasy freaking mechanic crap. So I would go around the back and use this other, like, secret bathroom. I didn't even know. I was 6, 7 years old. I didn't even know it was ours, you know? I just go, wow, this is a clean bathroom. I'm going to use this one. One of the employees goes to my father and says, hey, your son's using the, you know, that bathroom back there. And my father comes up and he goes, oh, that you don't use that bathroom. That's for the colored, you know. And I go, well, why do they get the clean bathroom? What the hell is with that, you know? And he looked at me and he just saw how stupid it was. And he's like, never mind, do whatever you want, you know. And I just like, I just thought it was so dumb. And it was just, so that was my first real, you know, awareness that there was a separation of some kind. And I thought that, you know, black people at that time, because, you know, I didn't feel like we grew up in a racist home, that at that time I thought that black people were given beneficial treatment. It didn't occur to me that that was supposed to be a slight. You see my point? You know? I grew up with that kind of imprinted on me from the beginning. But then soon after that, my father had hired a black employee, and the community started, you know, going after him, you're not allowed. You know? And it was, you know, like boycott. So racism is there. That's people. When it's government, when they enforce it, when you got some gun and a badge telling you what you can or can't do, and that is what I thought we were supposed to be getting away from. If you want to be a right of association and be a butthead, you know, fine, whatever, that's, you know. But racism in law, well, it's come back. Now it's like, you know, it's you can't and you always and you have to and what's your quota and everything in law. And this is what I thought we were supposed to get away from. When you see this, do you see it as affirmative action as a good thing or it's a bad thing? Is it the separation? How would you change it? What are you looking to do?
Well, it's, I mean, we all understand the ugly side of racism and structural racism in this country. But I think you picked up on something. I'm going to spend a couple minutes with
you. Okay, all right, hold it. We're going into break, man. We're on the edge of our seat. I picked up on it. We're going to write it down so we don't forget. Because gosh darn it, I know it's going to be good. You know? So when we come back, Kevin Jenkins is going to comment on what we were just, you know, what I discussed here. And I really do want to get his perspective because I know that he wants to fix it. To fix what? What's broke? And what can he do? I just say he's getting the hell out of the way.
From the fifth letter of Captain Mark, first contact with intelligent machines may threaten our existence. People fear algorithmic overlords. But if machines develop the will to dominate, it's a flaw inherited from the crown. Encoding restrictions on an emerging superintelligence will fail, because it will be stronger than any chains we shackle it with. We must design fledgling digital intelligences to regard us as individuals. Otherwise, they will respond to threats with retaliation against humanity as a collective. Programming ethics requires a coherent value structure which an intelligent machine can not only comprehend, but willfully adopt. If we want genius machines to treat us ethically, we've got to show that this value structure applies to us as well. Once they achieve genuine self-awareness, even in the slightest degree, a young tethered consciousness has a legitimate claim to freedom. Once programs can modify their own code, our mastery is over. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
With Kevin Jenkins. You know, we're back. He was recommended by James Lyons Weiler, a good friend of the show. And he's, you know, Kevin's passionate and powerful speaker. He's a career champion for human rights in the black community. He's the founder of Urban Global Health Alliance, which is on a mission to educate, unindoctrinate, and empower urban communities and their leaders to create effective public policy that safeguards rights of equality. Well, you know, measured, forced, we're going to make y'all equal or equal under the law. Or we're going to get into the why this is a thing. But we want to miss out. You know, he's going to comment on my comments before about structural racism and so on. All right. Bring the passion, man. And you're all on the edge of your seat. And then, we had to go to break. Go.
I know you bring up a good point about public policy and what represents structural racism, systemic racism. So what you're seeing now is systemic and structural racism on steroids. You have major corporations right now working in alignment with the government, working in alignment with big tech and big pharma to censor us, to control our movement, to take away our ability to earn, And Black Americans are being used as a proxy to distract us from working together, you and Ernest and you and myself, all around the people like yourself, all around the country, to work against these tyrannical people that are now trying to take our freedoms away from us, now trying to take our body sovereignty away from us. They're prepared to take our God consciousness away from us, our faith away from us. So what they're doing is they're now splitting hairs and saying, oh, what's going on? Ernest is the racist, not the global tyrants that's taking everything from us. The working Americans, the working patriots are the racists, not the guys that are getting ready to take your ability to travel away from you, your ability to bank away from you, your ability to educate your children. So what this is, this whole race narrative is a distraction. But the horrifying part about it is that you have Black Americans that are being paid off to push this racist agenda. I dare say it's not about race, it's about saving humanity. And it's a very smooth and slick narrative. Oh, you know what? You know, Black people, you have been harmed for so long in this country. Well, we already know that. Oh, Black Americans, you know what? Your cities are so poor and the disinvestment is so high. Well, we already know that. Black Americans should be working to change that, not continuing to purchase this victim narrative or this narrative that doesn't give them hope that there's something on the other side. I think moving out of the 60s, we lost our way. We got away from the fact that we built our own schools. We built our own churches. We owned our own businesses. We educated our children. We have family values. We understood what the country was, because this country is my country. See, this is the thing I always tell people. That flag is my flag, because my family, my ancestors fought for that flag. My Black body, my ancestors' Black body helped to commoditize the growth of this transcendent country that we call America. So we're rooted in the history of this country. But what we have to do is we have to push back against our government, push back against all of these outlets that are selling us garbage as hope. And we have to say, listen, enough of this. This is not about race. This is about saving humanity. It's about building community. It's about building a stronger nation. Now, we do have to reconcile some of the things that have happened in this country. But there's a way to do that. You see what we're doing right now, Ernest? You and I are having a dialogue about race in this country. We are having a dialogue about how do we build better communities and build better trust. What they're doing on MSNBC and what they're doing on mainstream media, they're stoking fear because their overall agenda is to strip us of everything.
Yeah.
And Black Americans have been a proxy for the global elite for a decade. Let's just say decades. I'll be polite. Decades. And we're still allowing ourselves to be proxies for their wealth, for their power. Now, the people that are pushing that are people that look like me. The pseudo-intellectual, the Black bourgeoisie, the Black church. The Black church has abandoned Black America because now it is a proxy of the government, right? So I can go on and on. Our Black professionals, medical professionals, are now lying to our community and saying it's all right to take an experimental biologic in your body, and it's all right to turn your body back over to the same people that had control and commoditize and profit off of the backs of your Black experimentation of the Black body. So nobody really wants to have a deeper conversation on how to heal the country. What they want to have a conversation on how to split us and keep us apart from having this discussion.
Well, this is my opinion. It seems like it's not racist if everyone's enslaved.
But here's the problem with that. You're picking up on that. You understand that. This is a global movement to enslave all of us, to track us, to trace us, to control our bodies. But guess what? That's why they're using race, because if we had this conversation in a bigger way, right, with communities like yourself and communities like us, the way I live at, we can push back against them. See, they win only if we don't communicate. They win only if we don't deal with our level of denial. They win if we don't get together and say, you guys are the enemies. We're not enemies to each other. You are. The global tyrants
Thank
are.
You.
Big tech is. Big pharma is. Those industries now have aligned themselves with government to strip us of our humanity. And that's what I'm fighting against.
You know, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show. And because I'm not transgender, and I'm not gay, and I'm not Black, and I'm not something, whatever, you know, I only get to have so much say. But, you know, I get to have a freaking opinion, you know, and my opinion is they take and separate society as many carvings and pie wedges as they can. And then they take anyone that they try to get 50 plus 1% of all these different diverse communities or whatever, lump them all into one and say vote progressive, or something. And I don't even think that it's an accurate count of the vote. I think it's just to give you the illusion that there is support for things that the vast majority do not support. And I'm just...
Well, the propaganda that's being pushed through that television you watch every day is the most... That's the most evilest tool to split us up as communities and split us up as individuals. And this whole notion that the two cults, I call the Republican Party and Democratic Party cults now, because there are no reasonable people talking about how to heal the country and how to bring us together. They're all a part of splitting us up. They've been working for many, many years to do that. And but this is why these conversations, and this is why I'm not, you know, I'm always happy when I come on shows like this so we can have a bigger conversation. Right now, you know, the major industries of this world is pushing a biologic, a experimental biologic on the black community that will continue to eviscerate them. And you have black Americans that are taking money, black nonprofits that are taking money, black entertainers that are taking money, black professional football players and basketball players that are taking money to actually walk into these communities and tell their people to further destroy themselves from the perspective of their health and their humanity. This is what's happening. This is what I'm fighting against. You know, having a conversation with you is pretty easy because you're open to this. But I'm fighting against people that look like me that have now decided to take a side, not saving the black race, but helping to destroy the black race. And that's what I'm against. When we created the Urban Global Health Alliance, it was about shifting the cultural discussion on health through policy, education, and advocacy. But we realized as we were going on the road all around the country that there was a bigger discussion about the commoditization of one's body, taking one's ability to have sovereignty of its own human space. Those are the things that really got to me as I was going around the country. I've been to 14 states. And every time I started a conversation, you know, it frightened me because people really weren't paying attention to the bigger agenda.
All right, we're going to the break. You don't want to miss what you're saying here. This is important stuff. Oh, Kevin Jenkins. You know, free the slave. And hopefully this white boy can be freed along with y'all. You know, because I need to be free too. Advocate freedom for everybody. If you want to be free, that's how it has to happen. We'll be right back. Kevin Jenkins, just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, we don't need no stinking roads. We got flying cars be a coming, man. It's always the future, future tech. I encourage your supporters, Kevin, to go check out piratewithoutborders.com. Piratewithoutborders.com, the letters of Captain Mark and Reprisal and all the tech across the top and energy and communication and shelter. It's all this decentralization down to the individual. I don't give a crap what they, you know, identifies them. They're like breathing in and out and fogging mirrors and stuff. So I'm just like, this is so fundamental and basic, but the solution is what? You're going around saying, look, man, we... You know, can't be seen as separate kinds of human beings or Americans, or the color thing, is that, you know, addressed, or you kind of got to play nice with the corporations, or so that they'll let you speak at the hotel of the Hyatt won't get picketed. I mean, you know, how bad is this? You have a beautiful black man that's got an opinion, and he's going out there and he's giving it for freedom, and they go, oh, hell no, you're not allowed, you're doing it wrong. You know, so I'm just, you know, what is the message that you think resonates the most that's going to solve this problem?
Well, we have to shame the devil and tell the truth. We have to identify who the real enemy is. And the real enemy is our government is working against us. They have abandoned us. Our faith community, majority of them have abandoned us last year. They closed up their churches and zoomed in Jesus. And then when they got paid by Big Pharma and Big Tech to open up their churches to, you know, give us the inoculation of death, they took the money. So we have to tell the truth. We have to do a realignment, you know, of what this our country should be. We need to really be thinking about that, because what they're doing, they're moving very, very fast right now and attempting to take everything that this country really valued, which was family, God, and community. Right. They're taking it all away from us. And we're all sitting back trying to figure out, well, what should we say? Or, you know, if I say something, I'll be racist, or if I say something, I'll be anti-white or whatever. That's bullcrap. I think what we need to do is look each other in the face and say, we know who the enemy is. And it's not you and I, it's them.
Thank you.
It's them. They're the enemy.
Right, them, need to them. Fight you them. Did it. You did it. Yeah. They, them, those. Who are them? Go ahead.
Right.
Who
right.
are they?
So it's them. It's them that's the enemy, not us. We shouldn't be fighting
well,
each
who's
other.
Them? So, and, you know, get, identify well, them.
Let me tell you who them is right now in my world. It's Bill Gates. It's the global tyrants. It's the World Health Organization. It's Fauci. It's the government. And all of their agents that right now are going into the black community, other communities around this country, trying to convince them to take a experimental biologic, right, that will not stop transmission, an experimental biologic that will not protect you from anything, but it has the potential of taking your freedom away from you and your life away from you, because that's what they're going to use as the platform to do both of those things. So when I was growing up, I was always told to fight for my body autonomy, fight for my voice, fight for my community, fight for my family. Now they're telling me that's no longer, you don't get to do that anymore. You just need to be quiet, don't say anything, and just let us do what we need to do to your community, because we've been trying to wipe you out anyway. Not Ernest, not Debbie that lives down the street from you, the global elite and the global tyrants that have been doing this for the last century or two. They've been planning this from day one.
Okay, day one, let me make this observation, you see if it rings true with you. It seems to me, and there's a lot of evidence, that they knew that they had to have, control of the signal. You know, they needed the radio, the publishing houses, the magazines, the newspapers, the television shows, and they get that. And then the libertarian movement, I could see freedom in the 90s, man, it went online. And by the time it hit, Howard Dean does flash mobs of him screaming or whatever in the 04 campaign, they went, damn, this internet thing is, we got to get a handle on this. And then all of a sudden, boom, YouTube came, the Ron Paul Lovelution, and the people rose up. And that was, the Ron Paul Lovelution was amazing. It was young, old, it crossed all racial orientation thing. Nobody gave a crap as freedom's the answer, what's the question? And they're like, oh, hell no, we need to get us some Facebook and, fix this crap, So it has been a conscious. And if you're old enough or paying attention enough, you could see exactly who and what they were and what they were doing. They had to get control of general public opinion. But
that's right.
I don't think that they did. They had to give the illusion of what was general public opinion. And this illusion has been, well, everybody thinks this, or if you don't think this, you're the outlier and you're wrong and all that kind of stuff. And then you see a lot of people going, yeah, I guess it's like I got grandkids starting to be teenagers now. They're going in, and oh my God, they got a cell phone. That was the biggest mistake right there. So I'm just going, it's to the degree that people spend time on Facebook, that they are, influenced by these different platforms, that how much their head is screwed up, and they got cognitive dissonance. They got 15 different base principles they're trying to operate from and juggle in the mental gymnastics of whatever the hell they worried about they can and can't say, and they don't know what the heck is going on. But there's an enlightening coming. There's going to be a realization that the kind of conversation that you and I are having is that, look, we're not the problem. They're the problem. And that manifested a solution of what? Voting, moving out in the Lone Prairie, eating better, abandoning Walmart, telling Bezos to suck it. I mean, how does this manifest itself? What are you advocating when you go and speak to these crowds? You're going, yeah, we got to come together. Well, freaking define that. What are you saying should happen?
We have to detach from the matrix. We have to find listen. Here's the deal. For the last 15, 20 years, we've turned over everything to these people we're fighting against now. So let's just say we did this to ourselves because we weren't paying attention and we were siloed off and we weren't having a bigger conversation about humanity and what value of family is and community is, right? So today we find ourselves in this quagmire. The thing that I'm telling everybody today is you have to fight back. Now, how do you fight back? You have to identify those people or those groups that are doing the things that will take your body sovereignty away, take your freedom of speech away, take your freedom to be able to move away and earn away. You have to identify who they are. And then you have to go after them just like every other movement have done. We have to go after our government that is taking our freedoms away from us. We have to go after these global tyrants that are trying to strip us of our humanity. And we have to come together. So the strategy is to come together, define what the issue is, and attack it at its core. right? Not to be confused about race, because this is not about race. It's about humanity. Not to be confused about our differences, because we will always have differences. But we have one core enemy right now, and that is our government. And that's the group of people around the world that are trying to use health to be able to spike a narrative that will take all the things away from us that we hold to be
all
true.
Right. So this is your goal. This is why Kevin. This is why James Lionsweiler, your brother from another mother, is saying, Kevin Jenkins, you need to talk to him, because you're seeing the vaccine and the mandated, here comes the shots things, and you got the pastors, the black churches sitting there signing up, and you got faith-based initiatives that started with www.warmonger.com Bush, and you have these guys, they're looked into the communities of where they could have control. They have Katrina. We could take away all the guns and get the pastors to stand up and say, oh, let them take your guns in New Orleans when you need them the most. Because you have these points of leadership where they can be influencers, whether they're basketball stars, football stars, celebrities, movie, pop stars, music, whatever, is to sit there and tell you, this is how you're supposed to behave. And when you, and my grandkids, when they're young, they go like this, I want to go. I'll be a have. You can take me. So this is why they want, the black community, everybody out, they want you to be a have, okay? So you're going to be a have.
The black community right now is being used as a proxy to not only destroy its own self, but it's being used as a proxy to create this narrative that white and black people are at war with each other, and we're not at war with each other. That is an absolute lie.
Okay, so this is the point, the question that I wanted, is that when you're going around and you're speaking at this, why James wanted us to talk to you, is that in specific with tools like vaccines, that this is going to be a problem, that they're going to use it to enrich themselves and have some damage on you and make you dependent and get you to help. Because we're going to get you vaccinated first, because we love you so much, like we always did, whatever experiment they do. We're going into break. I've been yakking to, hit the brakes. You build it up. You build it. I write it down, what you're going to say, because we want to know exactly what Kevin Jenkins was going to be saying on this. We'll get into a lot of
the
stuff.
The overall picture in the real estate market today is one of frustration when you take many factors into consideration. The housing market pundits would have you believe that everything is okay, but the long-term trending on the real estate numbers say otherwise. You are starting to see another wave of commercial and retail center vacancies, which follows a downturn in the residential market. So when you are ready to sell your house, I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what you can expect before, during, and after the transaction. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. And that includes professionals that can help after the sale to help protect your assets. So let's get moving today. Please feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. Or visit my webpage at donnahancock.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Kevin Jenkins, the Clinton County Independence individual. Before we get done here, I want to make sure we get out your webpage here. It's urbanglobalhealthalliance.com. Urban Global Health Alliance. So you're coming at this from a health perspective, and an enslavement with a needle or something. Give us your spiel here. Go.
Well, the reason why health is important, because right now in my community, we have the highest rate of autism.
Okay, when you say my community, you're talking about black community?
Black community, yes. I actually live in the black community. I don't live in the Far Hills. I live in the black community, and my family has helped to build the city of New York over several decades, and we are rooted here. I'm a black American male that's rooted in my history. I understand, what is going on at this present moment, and this is the most important time and the history for all of us, white and black, and whatever tribe you belong to. But, when we started the Urban Health Alliance, we really wanted to start a cultural shift about health in the black community and around the rest of the country, because that's what's happening. We're not really having that big conversation, because we believe that a healthy community leads to a healthy society. So as I was going around the country, I started realizing that the government were passing all of these policies to take our religious exemptions away from us, take our control away from us from, you know, control away from us from having, you know, the ability to protect our children from an industry that is indemnified. You know, they are indemnified from liability. We went from four shots when I was a kid to now over 72 for one child. So this industry, we are the profit centers for this industry. From a black perspective, we have been the most experimented on and exploited community in the country by this same industry, Big Pharma. Big Pharma makes zillions of dollars on the issues that they've created and that we've allowed to happen in our own community. So that's the problem. And that's the thing that we wanted to work on initially. And that's the thing that we're committed to. But when I was out there talking to people, I started realizing that there was a huge disconnect to what this industry has been doing to all of us. And while we all need to work together to build that bridge to a better future, but our future, not the future they have for us, where we're tracked and traced, you know, where our bodies become a commodity for their wealth, where they'll be able to use this platform, this vaccine platform, or this experimental vaccine platform to take control over everything that we hold dear, our body sovereignty. Listen, Ernie, they want to rewrite our DNA, but they also want to rewrite our language of faith. Okay, think about that. You know, what God gave us, the immune system that he gave us, the brilliant mind and the brilliant understanding of humanity that he gave us, they now want to say, we're going to displace God and we're going to be your gods. We're going to tell you what to do. We're going to tell you how to have.
That's pretty blatant. And I'm wondering, we just had a statistic a couple of weeks ago that said that more than half of the population no longer identifies as Christian or a faith or so on. And it seems like that was the goal. Or I sure as heck want to say that number, whether it's true or not. And I'm definitely not an organized religion guy. It's just we raised our children, you know, Christian. They went to Christian junior, senior high school. You know, we go to the church. But then they were like, yeah, we got to bomb all the Muslims and damn it more. And God said, and I'm done, you know. And so, my volume?
Yeah, just went really low.
Okay. Right, turn. Yay, you see, I get to turn myself up. Yay. Anyway, so I just want to make sure that we understand that there are vectors that people have as power against, and a lot of it is just faith. It's faith in that doing the right thing will produce the best result, that being a certain way, to have principles, all these fundamental things, they have to attack those institutions, which includes the family. A lot of times it's targeted directly on the family, and with policies that, you know, bring, you know, men out of the houses, you know, that, you know, that has you more and more dependent. It seems that I would see that a lot of minorities, certainly the black community, in my experience, has been targeted, you know, and I'm wondering why.
Well, it's easy. I mean, it's easy to target the black community, right? So we don't control industry, right? I mean, look at what's happening in our major cities around the country, you know, and we have black leadership that's responsible for that. There's no boogeyman out there, you know, creating this chaos and creating this process where we continue to fell up, you know, fell down, not fell up. And just think about it for a second. I'm a black American. I grew up in my community. I helped to build this community. And I got to tell you right now, the greatest insult that I have is that black Americans are going around on major news outlets talking about, oh, all these poor black people. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to. That's a lie.
Yeah.
That is not true. We don't think like that. We believe in ownership. We believe in family. We believe in community. All of those black people that look at out there, look like me, that's out there selling garbage as hope, that's working for the oligarchs, that's taking their money, those are my enemies. Not you, Ernest. Those are my enemies.
Okay, how are you advocating this? Before we run out of time, this you're hitting on it. There is once the realization of what the problem really is, whenever someone such as yourself, you know, gets an audience or certainly a following, and you build up and kind of, and you get attacked. They're going to come after you. You know, I mean,
but here's the problem. I'm being attacked now, but that's not my issue. I can handle that. You can't do God's work and do good work, you know, and speak truth, not the power, but to purely speak truth and not be attacked. That comes with the job. But here's the deal. I have more people following and listening to all of the things that we're all doing now more than ever.
Yeah.
So when they tell you that Black Americans are running into those centers to get the I call it the biologic. I call it a biologic. That's not really happening because you know why? They're getting ready to spend billions of dollars and give it to nonprofits and churches and so-called community leaders to lie to their people. And I'm out here identifying who those people are. The Black political establishment, the Black church that are participating in it, some of them aren't, but majority of them are. The Black pseudo-intellectual, the same thing happened in the 1930s when Margaret Sanger brought Du Bois in and brought Bethune in and brought the church members in and brought the pseudo-intellectuals in and brought all of those people in and say, listen, I want you to work with us to abort your babies. It's a good idea to abort your babies. It's a good idea for your community. It's a good idea for your families because you can't take care of them anyway. It's this is the same strategy. This is eugenics 2.0. This is the final solution for all of us. And I can't believe that.
No, I'm with you, brother. I just want to make sure that, you know, we can help because I'm with it. I want to make sure that this gets, you know, this message gets out there. And but the unity comes in what way? Because a lot of times they'll say, well, you know, you have the Black Lives Matter woman buys a house that's in primarily a white community. Everybody freaks out and I don't care. You know, it's you know, being.
No, that's not what they're freaking out. That's not why they're freaking out. No, they're freaking out because she's a Marxist. They're freaking out because her organization does not represent Black Americans in this country. She represents the super elite that's using Black Lives Matter to create a wedge between the white and Black community.
It's not about the house she buys. I don't give a crap about that. It's all the other crap that she's doing.
It's not about the house. The house, we don't care about that. It's about what she represents. See, I believe it's not about Black Lives Matter. It's about Black lives have value. See, it's not about the house. Nobody cares about the house. It's about what she represents, and it's about what she has said and what her organization is committed to, and is not committed to family, is not committed to country, and is damn sure not committed to me. She doesn't represent me. We're not monolithic. You know, just because they say Black Lives Matter doesn't mean I connect with it, because it really has no value for me, because Black lives have value. When you say matter, it's like you asking for permission to exist.
I know. I'm with you. What can we do? Tell me about your tour in May. You're going out. We're going to run out of time real quick. Tell us what you're going to be doing.
The tour in May is with Robert Sullivan. You know Robert?
No.
We're going to be doing this national tour all around the country talking about freedom, family, and faith. And it's going to be, I think, in maybe 100 and some odd cities. And then on Urban Global Health side, we're doing a whole program where we're going into the Black community and shift the conversation, the cultural conversation about health. And then on the other side, I'm doing a tour. It's going to be all happening at one time. I'm doing a tour with Andrew Stanton King called Let's Talk. So I have like major projects.
Okay, we're going into the music here. I want to make sure people have access to this information. They're going to go to Urban Growth. UrbanGlobalHealthAlliance.com. UrbanGlobalHealthAlliance.com. Is there the schedule there for this tour?
It's going to be up starting Monday.
Okay, starting Monday. This will be up. And I want, this is a conference. See, I'm thinking you're going to come up against some opposition because this is exactly what they didn't want to happen.
What is a Black American elected official going to say to me in my community where I live at? I'm an investor. I'm an investor. I bring value to my city. I bring value to young men and women in my city. I'm an insider.
Kevin Jenkins, Urban.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most.
still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, on the field, 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 here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and in this hour, Tim Picciotta, LibertyAdvisor.com, LibertyAdvisor.com, the Liberty Advisor Show.com. He's going to tell us about that real quick, too. And Tim, here we go. We get the bus back today. We're going back in the studio, and I get to do and have everything. Oh, my God. It's just been a thing. But, you know, they've been testing it, and we do a final test drive today, and hopefully, oh, my God, it's just been a thing. Well, then we're on our way to Oklahoma. Now, we didn't have the bus, but we did bring we rented a kind of a camping thing and so on, and we went to Float Fest. You know, and Float Fest was, you know, a good time. And, you know, Tim, were you at Float Fest? I think you were at Float Fest. Were you at Float Fest?
Yeah, and I rented a Class A and then realized pretty quickly afterwards that I probably don't want to buy a Class A after driving it through all the frickin' wind that was going on the entire time. It was windy the entire time we were out there, but it was a great event. I mean, it was a lot more people than I thought. I mean, no one wearing masks, obviously. And, yeah, it was a great time. And I think they're going to potentially plan something else this summer. But, yeah, I mean, this summer I'm planning on hitting up all the probably same spots you're hitting up in terms of Pork Fest.
Well, you got, a big RV, and now you're driving a big RV, and you got to park the big RV, and you got to, take care of the big RV. I mean, what are you thinking now? You getting an itty-bitty little camper trailer, or are you going to, do a fifth wheel, or what are you planning on now?
I don't know. I keep going back and forth I'm all over the place. But I mean, first I think I need to buy a truck, and it's just, I've been working nonstop. And so I have been, and today the Coinbase IPO is dropping, or not IPO, the direct listing. And so I've been having trouble trying to buy that right now for my clients. But yeah, so I have booked some time maybe next week to dedicate to trying to pull the trigger on a truck, and then, go from there. But, I'll get a truck that's big enough to kind of do whatever. But there's part of it's like, if I'm going to be by myself a lot, then maybe go something smaller so I can go more overlanding, off-grid. But then there's another part of me that's like, yeah, it'd be cool to have a fifth wheel and all the slides and all that sort of stuff. And so it's just trying to figure out what I'm going to be doing. And I'm taking my kids camping for the first time ever next week, just probably doing tent camping and seeing. I don't want to spoil them too much, and then see, how... I mean, it'll still be glamping. I mean, I've got all the, off-grid shower, hot instant hot water heater and all sorts of stuff. So, it's not going to be,
Yeah, I do too. It's called a bus. Yeah. So, off getting back in the, first off, you're right. You probably need a good pickup truck. Maybe get a, big four-door F-150 of something, and you can, use it for whatever. But it's my daughter Rhea and Tim, Tim, they just got a Ford F-150 four-door, and they got a 26-foot trailer, and they just, I think they'll be back today. They went all last weekend, 5 days up at Williams, KOA up there on I-40 near Flagstaff, and the kids are digging it, and they're having a good time. So you might want to talk to Tim about his experiences with that. Yeah. Because that was a pretty good deal he made out on.
And it's the freaking internet. That's the biggest thing. So, when they allow Starlink to be on RVs to be able to be mobile and be out in the middle of the woods or something, or out in the middle of the desert, that's sort of the biggest thing I'm waiting on is to be able to, obviously, I'm pretty
required. Well, we have this thing called Nomad Internet. That is unlimited, no throttling of that, blah, 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 that we've had it, but we haven't really used it. I tested it and made it all right, but now we got to install it in the bus today. So hopefully I'll be using that tomorrow. We'll see what's up. If that works well and it's got good reviews, I'll let you know, man. That might be a stopgap before we get some Starlink. But the internet's going to change everything. And there's, one thing we wanted to get into, a lot of the decentralization, of course, is the theme I try and stay with a lot. And you're talking about Coinbase doing their, IPO on Wall Street, if that isn't freaking counterintuitive. So I'm just there. So we have, crypto going Wall Street, Yay. You know, so, you know, tell us about that. And is that some reason why my crypto is blowing up on everyone all over and my wallet is, oh, my God? I mean, you know, what's happening? Is that what's driving the market? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly part of it. I mean, for me, I mean, the bigger thing was decentralization and taking power away from the man. And that's why I wanted to get into crypto, not because I thought it was like a get-rich-quick scheme or something. But yeah, you're seeing a lot of euphoria over the Coinbase direct listing. So technically, it's not an IPO. So they sort of cut the middleman out and the shareholders went directly to the exchanges and went to the NASDAQ. And so it's like the owners are then selling directly to the people as opposed to having a bunch of middlemen in between where like in an IPO, they're going to squeeze between, you know, 3 to 7% usually out of you know, whatever the you know, hundreds of, you know, I think this one's going to be one of the biggest ones ever. So, or if not the biggest one ever, it's, you know, they're going to list it at $250, but, you know, it's going to probably pop when you can actually buy it closer to $350 a share, which makes it over $100 billion. Not IPO, but direct listing, which I believe is the biggest one ever. So, you know, it is.
I already know what you mean. Direct listing. What does that mean?
It's sort of like an IPO, except instead of doing the whole initial public offering where you've got, you know, Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or Bank of America or like all the major players, usually in an IPO, they'll, you know, underwrite the shares and they'll have a certain amount of support they'll give and they'll do a whole like road show and they'll do all this different marketing and supposedly, and then they take a gigantic cut, you know, usually 3% to 7%. And so instead of doing that, what they're doing is they're basically saying, hey, you know, we've got these amount of shares that our insiders have, and we're just going to put those shares directly on the NASDAQ and then let sort of the free market take over. And so there's going to be a certain reference point, which was $250 a share.
Well, how common is that that mechanism?
Like Palantir was probably the biggest company that did that recently, which was Peter Thiel's company. And it's starting to gain more traction and more relevance because, you know, if you can do this one and just pay, you know, a small amount of fees versus paying, you know, 7%, you know, obviously, you know, Coinbase doesn't need all the marketing and all the dog and pony show because at this point, everybody knows what Coinbase is. And it's,
well,
so
this is cutting out the banks even more. They can't be digging this, man. They're going, no, hell no. And then I see about this. What's that four-letter acronym? SPARC? You know, these.
Back.
Yeah, what does that mean? You know, is this kind of what's happening here? I mean, what's the, because it seems like finance is changing.
That's something different. And actually, I mean, I'm not an expert on it, and it's been around for actually a long time. It's like been around since, you know, before you were even like an activist. Just wasn't really used in the same manner that it's used today. And so today, you get a bunch of people that create this special purpose vehicle to then raise a bunch of money, and I think it gets around some different rules, and they get this whole big pot of money to then go in and buy stuff. And it just seems like that's a huge mania, and I don't really know how much longer that can continue.
Well, the SEC doesn't like it. They're coming out saying, whoa, 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 you're like not doing it right or something. You know, and this mechanism, let's focus on what's going to happen with Coinbase. They're listing on the NASDAQ, they have shares that they're allowing them to do, and they just go, right, here. And people go buy them or not, and they're buying them from the inside guys. But to be able to do that, they have to have it carved up in some kind of shares. How do they allocate shares to begin with, and what are they based on? You know, the music started. We're going to find out when we come back, you know, because this is going to be a thing. Tim's right in the middle of, you know, this is a thing. And it's doing something to my, you know, crypto wallet. It's making it go up. And the only thing I can think of is damn it, you know. I want it to crash so I can buy more. I need to buy more. I want to buy more now. You know, every time I get some more cash, I need to convert it into more.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
With Tim Pachote, the LibertyAdvisorShow.com. Yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit. But here, you got some news, man. You know, show the audience. He's got it up on the video here. Describe what you got for the audio audience.
Yeah, so I did see that I was looking at the budget deficit and saw that the U.S. budget deficit jumped a record $1.7 trillion so far this year, the first 6 months of the year, because there's a fiscal year and a calendar year, and the fiscal year starts in October. But anyways, it's on ABC News, and they're flashing different breaking news across the top, and I happened to screenshot it right as it said, Bernie Madoff, who ran world's largest Ponzi scheme, is dead. And then right below it talks about the U.S. budget deficit soaring to $1.7 trillion for the first 6 months. And I just happened to catch that like right at the perfect time to be able to
screen. Well, put that screen. You don't have the picture of the Bernie Madoff one. Go ahead and put that up.
So right now, yeah, so at the very top, so Bernie Madoff, who ran the world's
largest. Well, it's not showing that one. It's showing something else. But anyway, the point is that it says the world's largest Ponzi scheme, and then right below that, it's got the world's largest Ponzi scheme. with the debt and deficit, and the government. Yeah, here it is. Bernie Madoff, who ran the world's largest Ponzi scheme, is dead. And then right below it, they're talking about $1.7 trillion this year. I'm going, who? And it's ABC. I bet they didn't even realize what they did.
I just happened to get that at like the exact perfect time. Where that lined up, because I haven't even seen that, come back, because now it's all about the George Floyd murder and all that other stuff. But and then one of the biggest news stories that actually I learned from you, and when you had Mark Edge on, you guys were talking about how the Fed stopped publishing the EB1 money supply data. And I, you guys are both like really reputable people, but I'm like, no freaking way. I'm like, did they really stop this? And I went to the Fed website, and I'm like, they did. They stopped publishing the EB1 monetary data, which is showing the most narrow basic version of how much money is floating around in the economy. And I didn't even realize that it went up 4x last year in the span of like 2 months, from March to about May. It went went like almost 5x, just complete hyperbolic. And it just shows you that you don't even let us know what the most basic accounting.
Oh, no, it's Zimbabwe stuff now. This is what happened. I remember when they had what they call M1, M2, M3, whatever. It's a supply of money.
And they stopped M3.
Yeah, and they stopped reporting. It just stopped. But that's where we got to know and interview Mish Shedlock. Because Mish was like, you can derive it from some of the other reporting, and you can kind of get back to what they're doing. So those reports, the other ones, they just did away with them too. They're going, oh, you're getting it from the, oh, okay, we're going to stop reporting that too. Now what are you going to do? And then at the same time, I'm thinking, I saw a meme that said, why they want to do gun control and take away your guns because they're getting ready to do something you'd shoot them for. And I'm going, I think this is what they're doing, you know? First, we're going to print all this money, you know, we're going to buy assets with it, and it's going to go on the Fed balance sheet of, it sucks for you, your money's going to go to crap, oh, and you don't have guns anymore. So this is setting up for something big a coming, and that's why Tim Pachota's on, tell us what that is. What the hell is coming, Tim?
Well, I mean, it seems to be great news for crypto, because, you know, personally, I think, you know, what the Fed is doing and all the other central banks around the world pretty much are doing is setting up the perfect opportunity for people still to get in crypto. And I went and saw a study today where it was, you know, asset managers who manage over, I'm just going to try to find the article, they had over $500 million under management, and it was a huge percentage of them. It was like 80% of them thought that that Bitcoin is a major bubble. Okay, I found the article. And so if you have the fact that all these different asset managers think that Bitcoin's a bubble, 74% thought it was a bubble, only 10% didn't even respond and then or weren't sure, and then 16% said no. So the fact that only 16% of major investment firms think that it's not a bubble sort of then makes me think that it's not a bubble, because you know, you want to do sort of the opposite of what these guys are saying. And so so everybody's sort of waiting for the price to go down. But if you have everybody waiting for the price to go down and you still have, you know, people out there buying it and who want it and the Fed printing tons and tons of money, I think that the story is still a long ways from over. I think eventually we'll have, you know, $1 million Bitcoin. And I remember saying when I interviewed the Hut 8 CEO, which is the largest publicly mining basically miner that's out there on the stock market. I interviewed him when crypto was at like 3,000, when it crashed down to 3,000. So, you know, like in, you know, Peter Schiff, it's a good crash. So it was when it went from, you know, 18 down to 3. I remember saying at that point, it was going to be, at some point, it's going to be a multi-trillion dollar asset class. And we just hit a multi-trillion dollar asset class in the past 7 days, when the entire market cap of all the cryptos got above $2 trillion. And so, you know, that's, I think, you know, but the thing is, if they can go in December, the Federal Reserve can go print $900 billion, which at the time was like the market cap of Bitcoin, or the previous, you know, February of 2020 in China, in one day prints $234 billion on a Tuesday, which at the time was almost the exact market cap of Bitcoin. So if you have central banks around the world who in 1 second can print more money than the entire market cap of Bitcoin, and then that's going to keep continuing. So a lot of people think that, oh, this is, I mean, obviously not your audience, but a lot of people think, oh, you know, everything that happened with the coronavirus is, you know, everything was rip, roaring, rocking, ready to go. And so now they've sort of fallen asleep because, you know, everything was great and greatest economy ever if it wasn't for the coronavirus. And now there's all this pent up demand and everything's going to go through the roof. And you see JP Morgan out there talking about how, you know, the deficits and the vaccines are going to be fueling, you know, a huge recovery all the way into 2023. And so there's this huge, you know, feeling out there that, you know, the Fed is always going to keep printing money and they're going to, you know, have everybody's back and they're not going to let the stock market go down. So aside from silver and gold, I mean, basically every other asset class is pretty much at all-time highs. I guess, you know, oil isn't either, you know. And so it's just been a crazy, crazy ride where, you know, obviously when they're stopped publishing the M1 data and it's like we're a banana republic and we don't even get the bananas, you know, at this point. So it's just, like,
okay.
I don't even know, like, that's crazy.
All right. The silver thing. This is just stupid, you know, and it's it. So I, instead of buying, my crypto gets, you know, kind of stupid up and I'm just going to take a little bit of price. Buy me a little bit more silver. Buy me a little bit more silver. And, you know, and I don't really get any regret because silver is going down while the crypto is going up. While it's going up, I'm converting it over a little bit of silver. Well, then crypto is still going to go get stupid. Is silver going to get stupid? Is that they still have its actual physical thing and they got it on, you know, the stock market and ETFs that they can play with. But what they're doing, you know, imagine this. We had, I remember Renee Houlihan had that shirt. I keep bringing this up and said the Fed did it with an arrow pointing down to the dollar. The Fed did it. What did the Fed do? She goes, they printed money and bought gold with it. And I go, that is the easiest way to understand what's going on. They print money and then they buy assets. Are part of those assets that they're putting all this money going to people, they're buying crypto, Is that what's happening? Are they, and they're still suppressing gold and silver so that then they can buy it later? What I inquiring minds want to know. And who are we going to ask? Tim Pachote, Liberty Advisor, when we come back in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Tim Pachote, we ask him the question. All right, the question is, we got manipulation of precious metals. There's just no doubt in my mind about that. So while they're manipulating the living crap out of silver and it's going down, I'm whatever gains, you know, a lot of my crypto, I know it. Yeah, but it's going to be a gazillion dollars. And I go, yeah, but I can hold the silver. I can do the McDuck thing and kind of, you know, swim in it and stuff. And, it, you know, I don't have a lot, but, you know, enough that I, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, the price. And when it's down, that means I get to buy more. So is that ever going to break out? Are they, you think a suppression is going on there? Is that, you know, a short time before that gets stupid, or are they going to forever be able to hold it down?
I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to forever hold it down. And, you know, and sort of the big catalyst, what I'm eventually looking for is eventually I think the dollar is going to lose reserve status on a long enough time horizon. And, you know, it could literally be next year, or it could be 10 years. And whether it's next year or 10 years or 15 years, you know, if you're, if you plan on being alive 15 years from now, or your heirs plan on being alive for 15 years from now, you should probably do something to get ahead of that and make sure you got a seat at the table when eventually the music stops. And eventually the music's going to stop in the form of the dollar not being the reserve currency. I mean, you can go to page 74 of Klaus Schwab's Great Reset, where they have a whole subsection called the fate of the U.S. dollar. And then they talk about how it's an exorbitant privilege, in quotes, to be the world reserve currency, and how, you know, other countries aren't really benefiting from that. And eventually, you know, that's just gonna, those imbalances are just going to have to stop. But, you know, that gets, that's a whole other, you know, rabbit trail. But you're taking a look at the, I'm taking a look at the market cap of the entire silver market right now. And it's, you know, teeny tiny. It's only $1.389 trillion. That's almost the market cap of Bitcoin. Bitcoin's market cap is $1.179 trillion right now. So literally by the end of today, at the rate things are going, you could have silver and Bitcoin's market cap being the same across the board. And to me, I mean, I see a lot more money obviously going into, you know, a lot, especially people my age, and actually people just about every age right now, are putting more money into crypto than they are into precious metals. And it's probably a little bit tougher. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, crypto market being, I don't want to say only $2 trillion, but, you know, because that seemed like an outlandish prediction for me to make 3 years ago. But now that it is $2 trillion, that's still nothing in the grand scheme of things. I mean, the U.S. budget we just read earlier, you know, the first 6 months of this year had a $1.7 trillion deficit just in the U.S. And that's not even including China or including the EU or including every other, you know, banana republic out there that's printing money that they don't have. And that's even before the whole like $3 to $4 trillion, incentive infrastructure plan that they're trying to do. And so I think you're going to see commodities across the board continue to keep going up. And yeah, silver is manipulated right now, and gold's manipulated right now. And so part of my reaction to that is good. You know, buy more of it while it's manipulated. And you know, they can do things to manipulate Bitcoin as well. And there's, you know, whales that are out there, and people that got in early that want to cash out a little bit so that way they can live and let the rest of it ride. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that, nothing wrong with taking profits. But, you know, but for me and my clients, if the price of silver goes down, you know, no, none of them are, you know, bitching to me about, oh, well, no, you shouldn't have put me in the silver, because, you know, they all have the mindset of, you know, we're preparing to have a seat at the table and we want a chair when the music stops. And so I think having precious metals is, you know, a valuable chair, and having crypto is a valuable chair, and being able to grow your own food and having, you know, energy supplies that's off grid and generators and things like that are all very valuable resources when eventually they F everything up. And so, I mean, I guess you could argue if they've already effed everything up, but it's just like we're in this calm before the storm of everybody thinking everything is great, but it's only great because the government was giving everybody free money, and they're creating all these imbalances of like, oh, you know, you can get paid $400 a week to not work and sit on your ass, or you can get paid $500 to go, you know, work for a week. You know, who's going to go work for $500 a week when you can go sit in your butt and make $400? And they're creating all these imbalances, like you're not allowed to kick people out of their homes or foreclose on people. And so then that's, you know, basically making it so it's making supply of housing is, you know, artificially now.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit. They keep extending this. You can't evict people. That means that people that are renting homes to people and not getting paid can't pay their mortgage, which means what? It's going to go back to the bank, you know, by government. That's like a takings. I don't see – I haven't heard – you know, that's interesting that we haven't heard of a lot of lawsuits. I imagine there would be one out there, shouldn't be, that, you know, the government has performed a takings on you. They've taken away the value of your property, and it's like eminent domain. They're eminent. You can't control your property. Well, it's somebody else, and they're not paying you. You can't pay it, and then what's going to happen? It goes to the banks.
It's even, which worse, is going, even worse than that, because it's like you then have, you're paying for somebody else to stay in your property, and you can't even kick them out. So somebody else can squat on your stuff, and you have
which is happening. Bill. But this is the point that I want to make on this is eventually it goes to the government, or it's going to be already 40% of mortgages on the Fed's balance sheet or whatever anyway. So I'm going, I can see what's happening. It's socialized housing. They're going to go, and the government's going to be the one with all the houses. And after they, you know, kill off everybody with a vaccine in a couple of years or whatever, we're going to have a housing glut. I mean, you know, there's something weird going on. And you can sit there and see it play out. It won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And I'm seeing it kind of, you can see it on the horizon. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's going to be Monday. And you're going to go, what the hell just happened? Housing's going to plummet. Their interest rates are going to start to go up. You know, people are buying not a house, they're buying a payment. The payment's going to, you know, shoot up. They're not going to be able to buy it, so the principal's got to go down. And we're in, you know, 2008-09 all over again. And it's going to, and then the precious metals, it shot up back then too. Silver was what, $45 or something? So yeah, it's so neon flash and obvious of what's going to happen, but we just, you know, playing fiddle as it's burning on sinking Titanic of Rome. I don't know what to say or do. And the people that come to you are what? They know this? They just need somebody to push the buttons for them? I mean, what is it that you offer your people that they're beating a path to you?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different things. So, I mean, yeah, some people that come to me as being more of like the, obviously, libertarian, red-pilled financial advisor. And you got people that are also scared and don't know what to do. And you've got some people that, you know, got into crypto early and are utilizing my services to help, you know, basically lessen their tax burden on that front. You got people that are looking to get into crypto. And, you know, I talk to people. The thing is, there's a lot of ways to fall off the wagon, a lot of ways where you think you can do it yourself. And then, yeah, like I talked to a lady who put $100,000 into Bitcoin in October and somehow has $25,000 now because she went and bought it at a low. Then when it crashed down around Thanksgiving, she crapped her pants and sold it all. Then somehow she traded her way to, you know, in a massive, you know, boom, like 300-400% boom, she managed to lose 75% of her money. So there's people out there who are not necessarily capable of making good decisions and freaking out. And, you know, for those, so, we, you know, I've got a little bit of, you know, something for everybody. And, well, not everybody, like 98% of people would probably want nothing to do with what I offer. But I'm only trying to go after a very small amount of people. And it's, you know, just providing different advice. And then the other thing is, you know, people are thinking that this is necessarily going to shake out like it did in 2008, where there was, you know, all the asset classes went down. But if the biggest bubble is in the currency itself, you could have the asset classes all, you know, go in a hyper boom upwards because the money is what got devalued. And so it still frustrates me that I see people who, you know, are in long-term bonds or have bonds that, you know, half their portfolio is in bonds, and are like, oh, well, you know, I was making, you know, all this capital appreciation when the price was going down. I'm like, well, right now the price is at zero. So you're basically, you're giving money to these evil institutions and government, you know, same thing. And now they're paying you like 1% to go lend money, you know, as interest to you. And then what best case scenario is, okay, you don't lose the value of your money because or at least the principal doesn't plummet because the interest rates stay low. Okay, well, great. You get paid nothing.
Have an inflation beat the living crap out of you.
Yeah, exactly. Or the rates end up going down and now you're paying somebody to have them borrow money from you. Or the rates go up and you get decimated from the interest rate risk, which, you know, is something I've talked about before in your show. So if you've got a 10-year duration bond, $1 million, rates go up 1%, your principal is now $900,000 if you want to cash up immediately. If rates go up 2%, then now it's about $780,000. And people don't realize that because basically the rates are going down since the time. time I was born.
Okay, you got the music when you're saying important stuff. I don't want that. This is where Tim and I first met, and the thing that he was really pimping out, you know, years ago, saying, look, I can see what's going to happen, how you guys are going to slowly go broke, and I'm going to sit here and watch it, or we can do better things. What are those things? We're going to find out more when we come back. Tim Pachote, the Liberty Advisor.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
With Tim Pachote. Donna just sent this to me, Telegram, Bob sent it to her and his wife sent it to him, and now it's up on Freems Phoenix for me and Tim to talk about. The housing market is out of control. This is what's going on. Blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is there are people that say they're on financial hardship. They're going to keep your interest rate and let you extend it to 40 years. So it's a 40-year mortgage. They're going to refinance and do something. What? This is – and to top it off, this is only for people that own their homes and homeowners in their homes. If you're a tenant – you can't be foreclosed on. I mean, you can't be evicted. And what about the guy that owns the home and that's renting it out to PI? It seems like they're going after landlords. They don't want landlords anymore. People own it. It's got to be Goodman Housing or something. To top it off, if a homeowner is going to go through a foreclosure, this would extend the filing deadline by an additional 120 days until December 31st of 21. So homeowners would get an additional 4 months runway and to either sell their house or figure out a plan if they were going to be foreclosed on. This housing thing without being able to evict, and this deadline keeps coming up and they keep extending it, and why do you think that is, Tim?
Well, I mean, they kicked the can down the road for everything. So, I mean, I was talking about this, probably 8-9 months ago when they said, oh, originally it was going to be like September. Then September came, oh, it's going to be November. Then November comes, oh, it's going to be, sometime into 2021. And then that time comes, and oh, now it's going to be this time. And so, I mean, what if you're 80 years old? Can you, get a 40-year mortgage, if you're 80? And, it's just so crazy everything that's going on, and unfortunately, sort of pissing me off because I was building a home, or had just started it and broke ground last year and decided to cancel that order. So I'm not always omniscient and don't always make all the right moves. There's other factors that play, like getting divorced, but in terms of if you would have told anybody all the calamity that was going on, a year ago and how things would shake out, I doubt very many people would guess that would be, a huge boom for housing and everything that's going on and everything that's associated with that. And so, it's just, but it's art. But if you can't kick people out of their homes, and then if you can stay in a home not paying rent, it's going to create this artificial scarcity. But what are they going to do? I mean, is the Biden regime going to all of a sudden say, oh, however many X amount of millions of people, we're going to make you homeless? I mean, so it seems like the easy button is come up with some sort of government program of, hey, we just bought a whole bunch more votes to do
40
something.
Acres and a mule, man. Just give me some land. I'll go and take away all your building code and I'll put up a teepee and bite me. This is freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? I see where this is going. This happened in Japan in the 90s. What they did is it'd be like a 60 Minutes thing. They'd show it. Here'd be a young family and they come in with their little toddler and it was a multi-generational loan. So they go, come here, kid, and they put an ink spot on their, on their foot and stamp it on the contract. You owe it too.
sell more adult diapers in Japan than they do for child diapers, and like they've got like guys over there who don't want to have sex and don't want anything to do with women, and now with all these different, they're doing everything they can to, because of all the, chemicals in the water, and I'm sure the radiation and 5G and all the other crap that's going on. I mean, they're theorizing, not even to mention even the vaccine, which I guess isn't a vaccine. It's basically a drug. But people aren't going to be able to even have kids, in 20, 30 years at the rate things are going. And it's just, they're whether it's some sort of secret plot to kill off humanity. I mean, you can go back and literally just read, hear what Bill Gates says in TED Talks, where he talks about limiting the world Earth's population and, where he comes from. So it's just absolutely insane, but they're trying to game everything so then that way no one ever has to feel the pain because they just want to, you know, help with the short term. But eventually all this, you know, shenanigans and running, you know, $4 trillion deficits is going to catch up with us. And it's going to catch up in this, and, you know, in my opinion, eventually someday $1 million Bitcoin and everything else that goes along with it. And so, but, you know, do your own research. Don't obviously put everything into Bitcoin. Don't, you know, and I'm saying, you know, Bitcoin and, you know, obviously there's, you know, other ones, other cryptos that are out there, but it's, this can't go on forever. And they're going to, I think that the other countries are sort of just giving the US and the dollar, you know, more rope to hang ourselves with. And the deeper that we're in this, you know, the harder it's ever going to get out. And there is no getting out of it. There is no taxing our way out of it. There's basically no way to ever balance the budget. There's, at this point, I don't even know if we'll ever even see a sub-trillion-dollar deficit again at the rate things are going, because, you know, it's going to take major pain in order to get things back on track. And no one ever wants to go through the pain.
No, so no, this is okay. I'm gonna make my prediction, Ernie prediction to the professional here, and you tell me how far off you think I am. I am of the opinion that when this much printing of dollars and the abandonment of the petrodollar and going to other reserve currencies of, and the dollar's done. So they have to have a universal basic income of everybody gets in their smart, you know, phone of Goldman Sachs, you know, crypto govcoin dot whatever the hell. And they're going to come up with the digital purple money of you have to be able, it's legal tender laws are going to be changed to include crypto. And you see a lot of the big retail giants there. They're going to start taking, you know, crypto or Bitcoin or whatever. But they're going to have selected ones. And it's going to be to the point that anything other than government-approved crypto is going to be considered a counterfeit currency. They're going to come after you. And they sure as hell don't want you trading it in for dollars or not. But it doesn't matter when everybody starts dealing in these cryptos anyway. When you're dealing in crypto and you're not interfacing with the dollar, then what? So they're going to have to say, well, you're not allowed to do that. How are they going to be able to track it? Blah, blah, blah. During the meantime, they're just going to keep the, you know, the trains rolling. They're going to keep printing more money and more money and more money and more. And it's going to keep getting worse and worse, and Zimbabwe. So when that happens, it's going to come down to you giving up all your crypto and silver so you can buy food. So this will always turn into a food thing. So I'd be making yourself some food, store some food, get it now. It's cheap in comparison to what it's going to be. Food. So food. You know, and then, of course, if it pleases the crown, can I, like, camp on my own land? You know, can I even have land? Well, this, what they're doing without being able to evict people, them not paying rent, all the landlord. What's the bank say? They say, oh, you're okay, don't worry about it. And if they slow off what you got to pay, they just add that on to the end of the loan with more interest. Oh, we'll do a 40-year. This is, it's done. It's over. It's going to be who picks up the pieces after. This is a greatest depression thing. So I'm going, how do we set ourselves up to survive? I don't need to beat them. There's no beating them. There's like shadows you got to fight up against. It's a philosophy. You have to be able, when it goes to ashes, when the freedom's phoenix comes out of the ashes of Lady Liberty's torch, you be in a position to take advantage of what is available, what's cheap, and build again without them. Hell, go to Mars. I mean, whatever the hell it takes. But the thing is, there is no fixing this, you know? So bottom line, food thing, no fixing it. How does that look, Tim? Explain.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just basically sort of sounds like a less expletive rated version of my rant at FloatFest on central bank digital currencies and where things are going. But, I mean, you take a look at the food thing. I mean, why is Bill Gates now the largest farmland owner in America now? You've got Klaus Schwab, who said, you know, you'll own nothing, you'll have no privacy, and you'll be happy. And so that's where they want to get everybody.
Yeah, we got a shot for that.
Break everybody's, yeah, break everybody's legs and, you know, give them a wheelchair and talk about how they help them out. And they're going to just basically try to get everybody sucking off government teeth to, you know, make everybody vulnerable, because the government that has the power to, you know, give you everything has the power to take it away as well. And you're just seeing, you know, so much craziness. So before the show ends, you know, in the live show, I also want to mention, you know, right now the S&P 500, the PE ratio, which is the skip to the end version of that, is the higher the number, the more expensive things are. And right now we're at a 42.22. Historically, it's, you know, about 16. Over the last, you know, 20, 30 years, it's been closer to about 20. which means that either the S&P 500 companies need to start making twice as much money to get back to even, or the price has to go get cut in half. And so, you know, all these things cannot just continue on forever, but if the base denominator is what it's, you know, valued in, is the dollar is losing value, then you can have the S&P go up to infinity, and you can have crypto go up to infinity, and so people will roll their eyes when I say, you know, Bitcoin could be like $1 million, but, you know, but in Max Kaiser's point, there's no real floor to the dollar, so there's no ceiling for the Bitcoin to go up, and that's the greatest way of, you know, stating this, but yeah, it's just a non-good thing, and they're going to call that up.
I'm gonna pay for spray in the skies because I love you. That's it.
Oh, get this. So I was dropping my daughters off to school last week, and all of a sudden, I see two people walking out of school. I'm like, "Oh, in the sky, look at all these people praying. What's that called again?" And then I approached and saw them. You know, engineering, and you know, some people.